I'm Nancy Allen Dodd, editor of the Grazia Deal Business Report. Today we are interviewing Luis Villalobos. In 2007, Mr. Villalobos received the Hans Severance Memorial Award for Outstanding Contribution to Angel Investing. He sits on the boards of the Paul Mirage School of Business at the University of California, Irvine, and is executive in residence at the Grazia Deal School of Business and Management at Pepperdine University. Conducting our interview is David Sumethasorn, an MBA student at the Grazia Deal School of Business at Pepperdine and president of the Entrepreneurship Club. Welcome to Pepperdine University, gentlemen.
Mr. Villalobos, thank you very much for coming out. My name is David Sumethasorn from Pepperdine University, and we'll be conducting an interview about Tech Coast Angels. And for our audience out there, some general information. What should we know about an angel investor? What is an angel investor, and who are the Tech Coast Angels?
Well, starting with an angel investor, that's an individual who invests their personal capital into a high-risk venture. That's my definition. There isn't really a generally accepted definition, which is unfortunate. So there's a lot of confusion because there's about 10 million individuals that put money into so-called entrepreneurial ventures each year. And different people think of those – of sub-segments of those as angels or not.
They come in different sizes and shapes, I'm sure, and different amounts – of course, amounts of investment and, of course, expected return. What led to the formation of the Tech Coast Angels, and how large has the organization grown?
I was asked by our local business council – to do something for capital formation for Orange County. And so I convened a small group of us and we brainstormed on a whiteboard. And one of the ideas that I had heard about was the Band of Angels in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And so we each took one of the ideas. I took that one. And I called the founder of the Band of Angels and I must have talked to him a dozen times in a week. How do you do this? How do you do that? And I came back just absolutely amazed because they'd been operating 3.5 years. They typically had one or two ventures present for funding at a dinner meeting. And the staggering part was they had funded better than half of the ventures that presented in a 3.5 year period. So I came back and told my little group, I'm done. I'm going to go start an angel group. And that was the genesis of Tech Coast Angels.
Outstanding.
And you said how big we're now – spread. We have a network in San Diego, Orange County, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, Westlake, mm-hmm. and we're just starting one in the Inland Empire. Okay. And we're approaching 300 members.
Outstanding. What would you say is the average profile of the angel investor within Tech Coast Angels?
As one of our members says, we're not gainfully employed otherwise. Somebody that's got enough time to really spend with ventures, both the process part and then once you fund them, working with them so that you keep them from falling off the rails.
Yeah. Within those lines, one of our questions to ask is what's the difference between a professional a typical angel investor within Tech Coast Angels and, say, Uncle Charlie who has $10,000 to $20,000 to put on a business plan?
Well, your Uncle Charlie starts to sound close to an angel. Mm-hmm. The more typical Uncle Charlie is the one that puts in $500 or $1,000, and that's what often is called friends or family. Some people add a third F, friends, family, and fools. but that's a big segment. In terms of the numbers I told you, there's probably about 7.5 million individuals that put in less than $3,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So that's a large number. And that's probably the biggest difference. And they're not going to – typically they're not going to be active in the venture. They're not going to try to help you and coach you. It's like you say, your Uncle Charlie says, okay, mm-hmm. you know, here's $10,000 and God bless you. You know, let me know what happens. And they usually often don't even ask – what they're getting from the venture mm-hmm. or how much stock or what ownership or anything.
Mm. And the Tech Coast Angels, we had here over 140 ventures so far, $86 million in member capital, $812 million external, mostly IVC. Could you explain us what the $812 million is for the external and the IVC?
It's mostly what people traditionally call venture capital firms.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we invest, that's money that comes in occasionally the same time with us. But mostly after we fund and the company is doing well, then we attract venture capital to help them grow and scale.
Mm-hmm. Now, this money sounds fantastic for any person who's got a business plan or is trying to be getting his venture funded. So what specifics should an aspiring entrepreneur know about the Tech Coast Angels?
Well, the first part is where to look. We have a website that has a big public face to it, and it pretty well tells an entrepreneur what we're looking for, what our criteria for funding, and includes an online application. But in general, what they should be – they should have a business plan, something that they've thought out fairly well as to what kind of service or offering product they're delivering to somebody that would see value in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about bringing value to some customer, and then revenues and profits will follow that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it goes up to the Tech Coast Angels, what kind of type of legal issues or challenges, such as accounting or labor in their business plan, how would that work out between the angel investor and the entity that gets funded?
Well, as investors, we take nothing from the entrepreneur. In terms of, we charge no fees, there's no consulting fees, no charges for anything other than our capital. And then with the capital, we just negotiate what percent of the company we'll get for that amount of capital. And typically, we invest somewhere between $200,000 and $1 million,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be getting somewhere in the 20 to 35% of that venture.
Oh, outstanding. Now, of course, that percentage goes up and down depending on the venture, I assume.
It never goes up.
Never goes up.
In the sense that and that's an interesting question, because a lot of entrepreneurs think that they're starting with a fixed pool and mm-hmm. just redividing it.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep issuing more stock. So when we say we got 25% of your venture, then when you bring in a board member, for example, you may give them additional shares. So our 25% continually is eroding.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do the next round of financing, when you take a lease and give some warrants to the lessor,
mm-hmm.
so our shares in percentage-wise continually drop. And usually, as a rule of thumb, by the time you have an exit so that you sold your company mm-hmm. or did an IPO, our percentage is cut by about a fourth.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about control of the business or the business plan? Do the angel investors occasionally get on board or become part of the board of advisors? Or
we usually insist on having at least one board seat on the regular board,
mm-hmm.
But control is very different. We rarely, if ever, have control. We don't want it. That's not our role.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we expect the entrepreneur to be the one that is directing the venture and executing. And I guess in some of the workshops I do, I call it the rocket ship paradigm. if you think of one of the big NASA rockets,
mm-hmm.
the entrepreneurs are the big rockets that get you out of gravity. And once you're outside of gravity, then you have the tiny little attitude jets that change the direction of that rocket. And that's what I think should be the relative relation between the angel and the entrepreneur. They do all the heavy lifting, and we're hopefully, from our past experience, helping them to not make the same mistakes we did when we were entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're the little attitude jets that correct the trajectory of that venture.
What is risk capital for high-growth ventures?
Well, that's really what separates, in my mind, what a – and professional angel investor is from a lot of the other people that put money in. The first part is the risk capital. There are some ventures that are relatively low risk as opposed to high risk. For example, your neighbor may have a print shop that's been operating for 10 years. He needs or she needs $50,000 to add another machine into the shop. It's a very well-established business. It's been profitable. So that's not typically what we would consider high risk or an angel investment. Mm-hmm. It's still investing in a direct investment into an entrepreneurial venture. So some people would still call that angel investing.
Mm-hmm.
The high growth is the other side of it. For us to make the returns that we're looking for, the venture needs to be able to grow. Otherwise, we're not going to get our return. If we buy 25% of a venture and 5 years later it's doing $1 million, there's no way we're going to make money.
Three major segments of providers of venture capital, such as IVC firms, professional angel groups, and professional angels. There's not any debt or leasing, or are there any? Will they invest in small companies that don't expect a high growth?
Well, the three that you mentioned, the institutional venture capitalists, mm-hmm. they differ from angels in that they use somebody else's money. And that's where the institutional part comes for venture capital.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm an institutional venture capital, I would go raise money from a pension fund, from Stanford's pension fund, mm-hmm. or any of the various pension funds or insurance companies or high net worth individuals. And then I invest that money for them in exchange for getting a management fee and a share of the profits, which is called carry. And they usually put in a lot more money. And they're typically investing in the $3 to $5 million and even much higher.
Mm-hmm.
The angels, then, you mentioned two categories, the ones that just freelance as individuals and come together in various ventures but aren't organized. And then the angel groups, which is a relatively new, it's probably been around now about 14 years, mm-hmm. starting with a band of angels. And that's an organized process where the angels meet and they share the process, they share the term sheet, they share the work, but it really is much more, in my opinion, a much more cost-effective way and capital-efficient way to deploy capital.
Fantastic. What is your opinion, comments on why do angels accept lower returns than a venture capital?
Well, the simple answer is I don't think they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also kind of question the other word, accept.
Mm-hmm.
We have to earn it, both as VCs and angels. It'd be nice if we could, almost like buying a bond, accept a given rate. But it really is going to be the rate we get of return is highly dependent on how good a job we do in helping that venture to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, we seek higher returns than traditional or institutional venture capitalists do because we typically are in earlier, take more risk, and take longer to get an exit.
Fantastic. Potentially dangerous, of course.
Oh, we expect to we typically will lose about half the ventures we fund.
Oh, really? Some VCs are raising a fund to collaborate with angel groups, and this is a new model, and we'll also use institutional capital. Do you see that becoming perhaps a wave of the future, or an evolution of the current angel investment community?
I believe so, and let me spend a little bit of time on that because it's really a very important point. Is early stage investing, which is really what we all need to do in this country, and that's what has made this country really boom and the economy great, is you have to start with getting those small ventures to grow. And it's very, very tough. When you're investing in an early stage venture, typically there's no revenues. Certainly there's no earnings. There's very few metrics to measure it. The management team may be incomplete or inexperienced or both. So you have to do a lot of work, and it's very hard, and it's very time-consuming. And then when you consider the other side of it, those ventures, really, it's not prudent to put a lot of money into them. They really can't absorb it productively. So here you've got a situation where it takes a lot of work with a lot of uncertainty to deploy a tiny amount of money. Well, it's very, very hard. And so what's happened is the traditional source of that capital, which was the institutional venture capital funds, have gone later stage. So they wait till the venture's already got traction, has revenues, even profits, and then they put in tons of money. So that's created this big gap, and that's what angel groups particularly are starting to fill. But even they don't have enough capital. So what's I think is going to be the wave of the future is to take the leverage that the angels in angel groups provide, because say Tech Coast Angels, we don't charge a penny. We don't get compensated for doing any of that work. Well, if somebody else can leverage that talent, and it's very, very expensive talent. Mm-hmm. Most of us have been CEOs of ventures that have been successful. We could be charging, you know, $300, $400, $500, or $1,000 an hour for our services. Mm-hmm. But instead, we donate essentially all that time for the success of the venture. So coupling that with an external source of capital, I think, is the way to go, because otherwise this gap that is existing right now is never going to really be filled.
Hmm. It sounds like the angels within Tech Coast Angels are having a lot of fun anyway doing it, though.
Oh, we do. Certainly we do. And by the way, I should disclose, I am one of the people that is starting a fund to collaborate with angel groups, and mm-hmm. I'm in the fundraising part of that process.
Fantastic. For an entrepreneur, someone who doesn't have a lot of perhaps an Uncle Charlie or a lot of money to start himself off but has a fantastic idea, what should that entrepreneur be doing to gain angel support?
Well, the first part is to understand what an angel looks for and looks at. So the first part is very hard to invest in something that doesn't have at least a proven concept. So as an entrepreneur, what I would suggest the entrepreneur focus on is how can I really be entrepreneurial and spend either little or no cash to get to some kind of a proof of concept? Fortunately, these days, when you have a Web 2.0 business, it's very easy. I mean, you just get a couple of buddies from the computer science department, round up a little team and say, hey, you know, let's start a venture. And of course, you need some idea and some concept about what you're going to do. But the core idea would be to get some traction, get something that shows that this has a likelihood to work. For example, up here, there was a company that right now I believe is pretty well known, Make It Work. They service computers. They come to your house and they actually hands-on fix your computer without you having to do anything. Well, before they came to Tech Coast Angels, they had that sense. So they first started here in Santa Barbara, made the business work, showed that they could make it work in one community, then came to us and said, gee, look, it works. Here's the model. What we need is capital to scale it now and take it to Southern California, which they have very successfully, and they're going to be huge. So that's a very good model. In fact, they're probably were, when they came to us, more advanced than most of the ventures that we mm-hmm. see.
Further on down the line, proven concept.
Yes. Proven concept, more than proven concept, they actually had revenues.
A profitable concept.
A profitable concept in mm-hmm. a small little area. So it's basically, we can do this here, now we can scale it.
Of course. What's a couple of general questions here, just from your past experiences. What's the most successful venture you ever saw?
Well, if you mean saw.
or you're still seeing, hopefully still seeing.
Of the ones I've invested in, probably two. One is Gadzooks Networks that in 3.5 years we took from the angel investment round to an IPO that was 101 times our share value from investment.
3.5 years.
Yeah, wow. 3.5 years. And that was before the bubble, so it wasn't a bubble baby.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple of others that that I've invested in that have had spectacular returns like that. There's one I'm currently investing in, have invested in and sit on their board that's still in stealth mode but should make a big splash at the CES show in a few weeks. And I think that's going to be one of the big, huge ones.
Really? Mm-hmm. We'll be keeping our eyes peeled for that one here. When venture ideas fail, what seems to be the common weaknesses?
Well, if you take what people say is obvious is they run out of money. But that is about as insightful as saying that usually a skiing accident happens on the last run of the day. Mm-hmm. Well, because you're disabled. So it's not that they run out of money. The real question I think you're asking is why do they run out of money? Mm-hmm. And it's lack of focus is one of the big issues. They try to do way too much, and there's just not enough capital to do that. Another thing that really hurts is they don't recognize – they're overly optimistic on projecting revenues. So they say, okay, we're going to get revenues in the fourth month and then start growing from there, and this is our expense rate. And what angels or investors call burn rate, which is the actual net cash that you're consuming each month. And they say, okay, well, with this net burn rate that we're projecting, your $1 million will last us 18 or 19 months. Right? Well, what happens then is the revenues don't materialize when they thought they would. And you show up at a board meeting and say, well, you know, we're running late on revenues, but we have cut back. But they never cut back enough so that the burn rate still allows them to operate for the 18, 19 months. That's another probably key factor. Third, sometimes they just don't understand their market.
Hmm. What's the outlook for angel investing here in the coming years?
Oh, we're probably – if you looked at it historically, this is probably one of the best times ever. Mm-hmm. And for some of the same factors I described where the venture capitals, the professionals are going to later stage, it's leaving this gap. So if you look at valuations, the valuations of later stage venture capital are approaching what was in the internet bubble.
Really?
Yeah. And if I had to bet, I think we're going to see a repeat somewhat similar to that. The valuations that are so-called expansion stage venture capital are maybe at about 60% of where they were at peak. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the valuations of early stage, they've actually haven't reached bottom yet. They've just been coming straight down from the – not sharply, but they're sort of flat but still trending slightly downward. Mm-hmm. So – if you look at then what – as an angel investor, the bet you're making is that if you help the venture to succeed, you push them up to the next stage. The VCs come in with an expansion stage. We used to expect about a 2.5 to 1 step up valuation. Now it's running almost 9 to 1. Mm-hmm. So from a valuation side, it's tremendous. There's very little competition, so you can – take your time and find the good deals and work with them. And certainly our economy seems to be doing very well. So on almost any front, it couldn't be better.
Ever have the idea of perhaps expanding the Tech Coast Angels to foreign markets, or you'd have foreign angel investors in a way?
We get a lot of interest in that. In fact, just last week from one of the graduate students at the Paul Mirage School was approaching me about China and saying, you know, can we do a tech? It's hard for several reasons. One, the travel is difficult, but probably more the cultures. And in cultures more in the entrepreneurial sense, whether you take Latin America, Europe, or Asia. And I think Asia probably is the most promising of those because Latin America, the culture is just – failure is a central part of entrepreneurship in this country. You fail and you try again. There's no – it's not bad. In fact, you learned a lot and investors respect that. In a lot of countries, Latin America, Europe, failure is considered a stain on your reputation, on your family honor. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. You know, it's not good. So it's very hard to – there's other things that are cultural too. For example, again, in Latin America, they don't like to distribute ownership. So if I start a venture in Mexico, for example, and I've seen business plans, the owner has 95% and is not a working owner. He's just a passive owner. And the operating team has a general manager that runs the business and the rest of the team will share 5% of the ownership. Well, that's not a lot of opportunity or potential to entice the kind of entrepreneurs you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the reason I think it's difficult is the same reason that you see very little venture capital other than late stage venture capital in other than the U.S. The cultures of entrepreneurship just aren't there.
Hmm. Kind of segueing into that, what kind of philosophy or attitude should an entrepreneur have here in the U.S.?
I think the focus should be on what really excites me is an entrepreneur that is extremely passionate mm-hmm. about delivering some service or product, bringing value to some customer. Not about profits, not about revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Those will follow, and that's a surprise to many entrepreneurs that I talk to. Oh, we're going to make you the best venture investment you've ever had, or mm-hmm. That's not what I want the focus to be. I want them to be really passionate about something that they're going to deliver to somebody. And invariably, a company is going to run through hard times. And you want those entrepreneurs to go through walls if they have to, do whatever it takes. Of course, ethically, that's a key consideration. But whatever it takes to make that venture succeed. And often I tell the entrepreneurs they think I'm joking. I say, if your venture doesn't come before your mother, your wife, and your children, you're going to be in trouble. and you know, that's really tough. And they think I'm kidding. But if you don't have the support, if you are married and you don't have the support of your spouse, one of the two is going to suffer, your venture or your marriage. So many of the entrepreneurs are better doing it young and single.
Fortitude and commitment appear to be two of the biggest things, especially in the long run when it comes to a
business
plan.
Perseverance. You just have to keep going at it.
Mm-hmm. Any opportunities for MBA graduates perhaps from Pepperdine to get in with perhaps interning or assisting with Tech Coast Angels to kind of get an idea of what they should have to do in order to get their business plans off the ground?
Well, there's lots of opportunities, especially with Tech Coast Angels. Mm-hmm. We use interns all the time. And our process, the way our process works, the core part of it is what we call a screening session. And we hold two screening sessions a month at each of our networks. And a screening session is comprised of four companies each making a 15-minute PowerPoint presentation and then having 15 minutes of Q&A. And we typically have 20 to 25 members at each of those sessions. And if you sit in on one of those and see what happens and what questions get asked and the presentations, and many of the presentations have already been coached. So the information that the entrepreneurs present and the questions that they get asked, then we kick them all out. But interns at most of our networks are allowed to stay for the lunch session and then hear the investors, the angel investors, discuss what they like, what they didn't about each of those ventures. The feedback we get is that's a better learning experience than almost any class that intern has taken. And we also let them help in the due diligence, take on assignments doing internet research or whatever. There's some schools that will set up courses where they have teams of students take on a business and do a project for them, often marketing. There's lots of opportunities for any MBA that wants to get involved with Tech Coast Angels to do so. Now, there's no compensation for it typically.
Of course. But if I was an entrepreneur at, say, an MBA program, I think I would easily take this in order to gain the experience that behind closed doors interaction between the Tech Coast Angel investors and talking about what they thought about a business plan would be incredibly insightful.
Certainly, I wish I had had that in my career, that opportunity. And all the feedback we get is tremendously positive.
Outstanding. So, Colin, along those lines, the budding entrepreneur who's looking for feedback and information about his or her business plan, where else can he go about in getting mentorship or financial support for his plan?
Most of the communities that we work within have other organizations. I'm more familiar with the Orange County ones, for example, but we have the Orange Coast Venture Group, OCVG. They typically meet once a month, have a program with speakers, and they'll draw 200-300 people. There's usually some government-financed small business development company that gives mentorship and coaching to the entrepreneurs how to do a business plan. There's lots of it's just asking around and finding out who are the resources and the angels themselves. We do a lot of outreach in our communities. So we're often speaking like here at Pepperdine, I've probably done 4 or 5 workshops here for MBA students.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the biggest thing, you know, as we said, is my definition of entrepreneur is someone that doesn't know something's impossible and then goes and does it. And is that mental attitude. And I couldn't stress enough that you really should be looking at something that you're passionate about doing. And often young people, they get out of school and they think, well, what am I going to do? Well, if you haven't found something yet, if you haven't found that thing that just keeps you awake nights wanting to just be driven to go execute, take a job. You know, take an ordinary job, ordinary in the sense whether it's a large company or a small company. Get some experience until suddenly you get that light that lights up inside you and you say, I want to do this, you know. And if you look at all the recent successes, whether it's Facebook or Yahoo or Google, it's typically somebody in the garage or in a dorm that says, you know, this would be really cool for me or for our group here to do. And then they suddenly find that there's a lot of other people that appreciate it. And they start scaling it. And then it becomes something. But they didn't start. If you look at the history of those, they didn't start with the idea, I'm going to start a venture.
Mm-hmm.
They all started with the idea, hey, this is going to be cool. I'd love to have this. I'd love to have other kids in our dorm have it, or I'd love to have my friends have it, share our pictures, share whatever it is. And these days, it's so inexpensive to do an internet venture that's what I would recommend. But as I say, wait until you really found that something that you're passionate about. It doesn't take but one venture to be hugely successful. And whether you wait, whether you're doing it in college or 5 years after you got out, it probably doesn't matter that much. Just so you still aren't so far ahead in life that you now have kids and, you know, so many obligations that you can't spend 100-hour weeks on your job.
If I may ask then, kind of along those lines, if you could think back to when you were 20 to 30 years old, starting off in your first ventures, and now looking back upon that, what do you wish you knew back then that you know now?
Certainly, I wish I'd known then how capital works, venture capital, angel capital, a little bit more about ventures. I was lucky enough that I did what I'm suggesting, and I hadn't even thought of it that way. I ended up working as a consultant for about 5 years and then joined a little startup and then split from that when I became passionate about doing my particular venture. Certainly, probably more to the point, if I'd known 20 years ago what I know now, Tech Coast Angels I started 10 years ago. If I'd known what I know now, I would have started 20 years ago. Angel investing in a group is so much more capital efficient and fun than investing on your own that I should have done it as soon as I had a chance.
The top 5 mistakes entrepreneurs make, what are they? And you constantly see them coming up over and over again. Obviously, if they did, it would make the top 5, but I'm sure it makes you cringe when you see it happen to to entrepreneur after entrepreneur.
Well, I must say it's happened enough that I actually compiled a list. and I really broke it into categories. And probably if we look at the top overall mistakes, and I'll do like Letterman does and start from the bottom up. One is the number five would be a failure to state a valuation. And that's very controversial. Some consultants will tell a venture, oh, don't tell, you know, don't state the valuation because you'll be leaving money on the table. You know, wait till you start negotiating. To me, that's a big mistake. Imagine that you're considering that you've been successful enough and now you're buying cars and you're buying Porsches and you're a collector. And you see an ad that says, you know, 1965 Porsche for sale, no price. Well, you have no idea if it's an old clunker that you could pick up for $1,000 or if it's a, you know, prime car that may cost maybe selling for $250,000. And that happens to all of us. If you don't get a sense of what is the price for something, you don't begin to engage. And so I think, in my opinion, entrepreneurs that don't state some valuation range or their first stake in the ground and be willing to negotiate is a big mistake. You hide your light under a bushel would be number four. You don't explain what your venture is about. You can't articulate it. It's amazing how many people you see present at our screening sessions. And after a 15-minute presentation, the first question that one angel asks is, I'm sorry, I still don't know what your venture does. I mean, that's just inexcusable. You should be able to articulate that just immediately. Probably the number three would be you surprise your board or your investors. They're there to help you. If something's going wrong, if something is – you lost the biggest account you had, a contract you expect that isn't going to happen, whatever it is, you want them on your side. You want to tell them as soon as you find out so they can begin helping you work out a solution as opposed to think, oh, my God, I can't tell them that because they're going to be angry or upset or whatever. Probably number two would be a failure to execute, where you literally see companies that snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. They're going along brilliantly. They're going along brilliantly, and then they just stumble over something. In one case, the company I told you that was hugely successful, Gadzooks, the founder CTO, well, he was the initial CEO. They brought in a professional CEO, got tremendous amount of venture capital, had done an IPO, and then he realized that the technology had changed and he wanted to modify the technology they used. He could not get the board or the CEO to buy into that. They first pushed him into a skunk works because, after all, he was a founder and had a lot of shares. And eventually he quit in disgust. And the company that did what he wanted to do is called Brocade. And they're a multi-billion dollar company. Gadzooks Networks was sold a few years ago to Broadcom for $5 million. And here was a company that had a almost $3 billion valuation at its peak. So here was a total – they took the best company that was the ones they had defined in the storage area network, SAN. He came up with the architecture, defined the terminology, and yet they ended up losing. And probably the top one is lack of integrity. I can't tell you enough. Any sophisticated investor, the moment they see anything that suggests a lack of integrity, will just run from that entrepreneur. There's just – because you know that if that person cuts a corner here or there, you're next. Or maybe if not next, at some point you run that risk. Probably for – let's look at the top fundraising mistakes. One of the things I mentioned before was how when you're an angel investor, your percentage of that company's ownership keeps getting diluted because more shares keep getting issued. Entrepreneurs don't understand that a lot of times. So they start and say, well, you know, I'll sell you 10% of my venture for $1 million, and in 5 years it'll be worth $200 million, and your 10% will be worth $20 million. Well, it's not true. Even if they build that venture to where they sell it to somebody for $200 million, that early investor is not going to keep their 10%. They'll be lucky to have 2-2.5%. Whenever an entrepreneur will hype or exaggerate, it doesn't serve them well. A third would be they want an NDA. You know, my technology is special. And they should understand very few venture firms, venture capital firms or angel investors will sign a non-disclosure agreement. Now, to be sure, if you get far enough in due diligence and you do have an exotic technology and it is essential to the success of the venture, then somebody might sign a very narrow NDA for that one specific thing or agree to have a third-party patent firm or consulting firm do that analysis. But expecting secrecy or confidentiality is a mistake. You know, it's simple. We look at probably for every venture we fund, we look at 30. A VC firm for every venture they fund will look at 100. If any of us started signing non-disclosure agreements, we'd become paralyzed very quickly and could not look at very many ventures. Number two on that would be inability to answer questions directly. You'll hear it one of our screening sessions, and the entrepreneur starts dancing and instead of just either saying, I don't know, or saying the answer that they're uncomfortable with, they try to act as if, you know, somehow they could dance away from that question. And then the final one would be this not having an elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. Back to what I said before is that, you know, the concept of an elevator pitch comes from you suddenly find yourself in an elevator with one of the top venture capitalists and you've got like from the first floor to the eighth floor to tell them about your venture. So it may take, 20 seconds, a minute, something like that. Can you do it? You know, as opposed to by the time you got to the eighth floor, you've barely given them your name but told them nothing to excite them about your venture. So the concept of an elevator pitch is you'll run into a lot of people. You want to have something that's very succinct that gets them excited to want to know more. But that's generally the top mistakes.
Mm-hmm. What are the current hot markets for angel investing?
Well, the visible ones is the – and they're very hot – social networking, Web 2.0, anything in those spaces where you can get something like Facebook that with virtually no money then got to the point where they raised at a valuation of $15 billion. They took a small amount of money, $240 million from Microsoft for a couple of percent, and I understand they also took in $250 million from two other equity funds. But still, I mean, that was unheard of, even 10 years ago. So that's very, very hot because something that to the investor that you can scale to a tremendous valuation in very little time. Another area that should be very hot but isn't yet getting all the attention is data mining is one word for it. There's a very I think it's becoming a popular book called Super Crunching. Essentially what you can do with data in analyzing that and converting that to value is amazing. And the third is what used to be called artificial intelligence, where computers are getting better and better and better. And if you believe Kurzweil and his book, The Singularity, and somewhere in the next 10, 20 years, they'll be smarter than us, which is scary, but there's a lot of money to be made in any of those three areas.
Could you talk about the Entrepreneurs Conference?
This is something that one of the most successful VCs, venture capitalists in Orange County started back about 23, 24 years ago. Bob Hoff of Crosspoint Ventures put together a little half-day session to talk about ventures, and he put it together and invited me. I was his right-hand guy that helped them do all the stuff, and then I ran the second one. And that became the Entrepreneurs Conference. And we were both from Harvard Business School, so it's the, quote, Harvard Business School Alum Association Entrepreneurs Conference. It's become probably the biggest entrepreneurial event in Orange County. Mm-hmm. It's now a full day. We deliberately make it to be great value. So entrepreneurs, I think that it costs less than $100 to attend. Mm-hmm. And we do make a lot of money from it, but we plow that back into giving scholarships to the mm-hmm. local business schools, the local business school programs. But it's something I would encourage is usually in May, and it will be again this year. And it's something that's open to attendance for anybody. And it's an amazing program where we have very prominent keynote speakers. And then there's sessions of workshops that you typically get to pick from four different workshops at each session.
Is there a website address?
You can go to HBS, that's for Harvard Business School, AOC, Association of Orange County.org. So it's HBSAOC.org.
What about the fast pitch competition?
Well, that was something that I started for Techost Angels, and now we're into our seventh year. And we're now – initially we just held it separately, but now we hold it jointly with the evening of the Entrepreneurs Conference, and at the same venue we hold a fast pitch competition. And that one we're really trying to help entrepreneurs develop that art of doing an elevator pitch. So anybody can submit an application for it. And then we have four coaching sessions leading up to it. And through those coaching sessions – and they're all free. And through those coaching sessions, we have you prepare – and you get 60 seconds exactly. And like last year, we got about 87 applications. And we call them down to the top 12. And then the top 12 do a live pitch at the actual event. And we literally shut off the mics at the end of 60 seconds. And it's a lot of fun. It's great practice. It's tremendous value to the entrepreneurs. And we combine that with a networking, what I call a walk-around dinner. You know, carved roast beef, shrimp on ice. You know, pretty fancy, but it's great value. And a lot of entrepreneurs both learn from watching the fast pitches as well as from participating in the competition. And now we're doing that at each of our networks. So LA has one, I think, in February, San Diego in fall. So we have it all over.
Fantastic.
Oh, and one thing I might mention, one of our members in Orange County does some terrific podcasts. He's well over 100 now, and he interviews angels, entrepreneurs, and other people involved, venture capitalists, other people involved in angel investing and venture capital. And it's called the Frank Peters Show. And again, you can just download one of his podcasts or any of them or all of them and listen to them. And they're a terrific education, as well as the Techost Angel website on angel investing.
Fantastic. We will certainly be incorporating this information into the Pepperdine Network.
Good. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming out. It has been an absolute pleasure. Well, you, I'm sure, have increased the knowledge substantially of all the future entrepreneurs and current entrepreneurs going through Pepperdine. And we will be putting this information to work.
And good luck with your Entrepreneurs Club. I think that's a wonderful institution.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.